Hi, good evening. Good to see you all in the spirit, not physically. Even though we are not physically present, we are spiritually present, spiritually alive and spiritually present. Today happens to be a Good Friday. I was just meditating the last days of Jesus Christ, right? Got a few things from it which I thought I could share from it. If you turn with me to Mark chapter 14, I would go from 32 to 36. And they came to a place which was named Gethsemane. And he said to his disciples, "Sit ye here while I shall pray." And he taketh with him Peter and James and John, and began to be sore amazed and to be very heavy, and said unto them, "My soul is exceeding sorrowful unto death. Tarry ye here and watch." And he went forward a little and fell on the ground and prayed that if it were possible, the hour might pass from him. And he said, "Abba, Father, all things are possible unto thee. Take away this cup from me. Nevertheless, not what I will, but what thou will." So I was just, I just thought of three incidences as Christ was going to the cross. The first instance was this time at Gethsemane, where he enters into prayer. The second incident, like as we go through, we will go over there. It's a very interesting scene. Christ, all through his life, He was never unwavered. He was never afraid to go to the cross. Meaning, all through his life, when different propositions came, when the disciples spoke to him certain things, in all these situations, Christ would never, never back off. He'd never back off. He just went forward. At one instance, as it says, Christ set his face like a flint as he was going through Jerusalem. That was an interesting scene. So he was all set. But here in this situation, it looked like he's kind of shrinking back, right? So Christ, if you see here in verse 33, it says, Mark notes down that he began to be sore amazed and to be very heavy. That sore amazed, I just found out, like, he was alarmed thoroughly, struck with terror, alarmed thoroughly. So as he was going, suddenly he looked alarmed. And still he just kept going. And then he says to his disciples, and then he was very heavy. He was it's like he was very uncomfortable. He was not feeling at home. That's the word that means. So suddenly he was struck with, terror or something, like he's alarmed. And then he's like very uncomfortable. And then he says to his disciples, "Stay." Then he prays. And then he says to the disciple, 34, "My soul is exceeding sorrow." That is like, it's a word, it's like it's compassed about with suffering all over, the pressure. Encompassed, like surrounded by sorrow. That's what it means. So that's the situation he's in. And then he says, "You stay here and pray, and then go to," and then he says, he goes forward a little bit, and then he prays, "Abba, Father." Why was he in that situation? Was he afraid of dying? Was he afraid of suffering? Right? Why was this reluctance? Why was he repulsive? I would think it's not because he was afraid of the cross, not because of the suffering, but because of the bitterness of penal vengeance that he's going to face. He's going to, the sin of the whole world was going to be placed upon the Son who hated sin. Right? So that's the suffering, that's the reluctance, right? That's the repulsiveness. Because he could understand the bitterness of penal vengeance, right? And also he would, because of this, he would be separated from fellowship, right? From the Father. Imagine, he never had a beginning in his fellowship with the Father. He was always in fellowship with the Father. And looking at the situation, he knew the fellowship would be terminated for a while when he suffers the penal vengeance from God. Then that was the bitterness that he was in. So what did Christ do? He says, imagine what he did. Beautiful. He said, Abba, Father. Abba. It's a beautiful verse, beautiful word. Abba speaks about an emotional tone, a strong emotional tone of a Lord in his intimacy with the Father. Right? Before he faced the situation, he entered into a prayer where he said Abba, like a strong emotional tone of Christ towards the Father, which revealed the intimacy, right? The intimacy that Christ was living in and the intimacy that Christ was fellowshipping with, right? Just before he was about to go to face the cross. So that was the situation here. And then he said, Abba, Father, like in an intimate way. And then he said, all things are possible unto thee. Right? He never had a question about the nature of God. Right? He never questioned it. He said, all things are possible. But he said, take away this cup from me. Then he says, nevertheless, not what I will, but thou will. So he never questions the integrity of the Father's character. He never questioned that because all things are possible. He knew that God is omnipotent and is able to save him from that thing. But he never questioned that. But he says, all things are possible with thee. All things are definitely. But take away this cup from me. But nevertheless, he says, not I will. That I is in the emphatic sense. Like, not what I myself desire, but what you yourself desires. That's the way the I is an emphatic and you also is an emphatic, which means like not what I myself desire, but you yourself desire. So that's the prayer, right? One small point on that. I just noted a small point. The divine will, which is an expression of divine righteousness and love, limits the exercise of divine power. The divine will, which is an expression of divine righteousness and love, both together. It's not one over the other, but it's both together. It limits the exercise of divine power, the omnipotence. So God submitted to the Father's will, even though it was he prayed that this will be removed, but still, he finally surrendered to the Father's will, because in his mind, it was he was 100% determined to submit to the Father's will. That's why he emphatically says, not what I myself desire, but what you yourself desire. So that's what he says in Matthew 27. It says the angels came and strengthened them. Not that he needed enablement from the angels, because Christ is God and the angels are created beings. But that The presence of angels somewhat strengthened him on the inner man to face what is coming. I could also testify to this. In difficult situations, when we see the presence of body members around us, right, we get strengthened in the inner man, and we could go forward and abide in the situation, even though it is difficult. So he was strengthened in the inner man. He could also have been strengthened in the Father's love, or assured of his Father's love and his Father's presence. So with this, he immediately decided that not my will, and I'm going to submit to that will. So he was reluctant, and he was repulsive because of the bitterness of the penal vengeance that he's going to face. But now he became compliant to the Father's will, and he welcomed the Father's will. And then the reason why he did that is because he understood the sweetness of submitting to the Father's will. So the bitterness of penal vengeance was exchanged for the sweetness of submitting to the Father's will. So he enjoyed that, and then he said, I'm going to surrender to this. So there was a resolute surrender, unwavering, determined, purposeful surrender to the Father's will. That was the first thing which I thought. So Christ did that. The second thing which I thought, the second thing. In John 18:4-11, then he says that soldiers come, the people from the Sanhedrin, they come to arrest him. And then he says to them, who are you seeking? Then they said, Jesus of Nazareth. He said, I am. It's got a great meaning in that first time when he said. But the second time he said, who are you seeking? Then he said, I am. And then they said, Jesus of Nazareth. Then he said, I am who you're seeking for. Then happens to be Peter, who gave a lot of promises to Christ, swings his sword, takes off the ear of the servant of the high priest, right? Right. So he had to do something because he promised so much to Christ. God was not looking for it, right? God said, don't do this. But he just vehemently promised, kept repeated the word. If you see, it says he repeatedly promised that he's going to do. Then he did it. But here he had to swing a sword and take off the... If John 14:11, if you see what Christ says, should I not drink the cup that my Father has given? Right? That was a beautiful statement. Right? I noted concerning this, when Christ was yielded to his Father's plan, he would not let any hinder him in submitting to it. Right? Yieldedness would not let anything interfere inside. If I'm yielded to the Father's plan, yieldedness to the Father's plan will not allow me to, yieldedness to the Father's plan will cause me to discern the things that come my way and isolate it and separate it so that I will be submitted to the Father's plan no matter what. So that was the point which I was thinking in that. And there was this third point which I also thought, that also was an interesting thing. Just before they were taking him to crucifying him, that is in Matthew 27:34, what they did, they offered him vinegar mixed with gall. Right? It's a strong drink. Another place it says wine mixed with gall. Why did they offer it to him? I was just thinking. That gall is a bitter herb, which if you take it, it kind of stupefies, or it kind of causes you to be dull in your feelings, or it's something like a painkiller, I would say. So this is the Jewish, and if you see the history, the Jewish humans used to prepare these things and give it to people that are crucified so that they will kind of little bit come away or don't have to face the pain like that. So no wonder, like I was just thinking, these guys on the cross mocking Jesus Christ, probably they had a lot of it. they had a lot of wine mixed with gall, that they didn't sense the pain of it. But hear what Jesus Christ says. Jesus Christ didn't take it. He just spits it off. It's a very interesting scene. Why would he spit it off? He wouldn't take it. Why would he spit it? He knew that this is something like a painkiller given. But the reason why he didn't take it is because he didn't want his faculties to be clouded or made blunt so that he could suffer every element of the anger of God towards sin, because that is what he was there for. So he wouldn't take it. He just submitted to the Father's plan, and he took every element of it. So this is what I thought when the point that comes out of me after that, when obedience is an expression of the Father's love, when obedience is expression of love for the Father, then he would endure whatever comes his way to the fullest measure and not find an easy way through it. So that's what I thought. So in our situation, difficulties, right? Three things. Know that we could go to God. Romans 8:15, Galatians 4:5. Abba, Father. In a very intimate way, right? God the Father, God the Son, right? Number two, and when I am yielded, there could be many things that could come my way to cause me to be stumbling or to hinder me, right? But a person that is yielded can discern that and set it aside and would not make a decision that would cause him to do something outside of the plan of God. And thirdly, when obedience is an expression of my love, John 14:23, if you love me, you'll keep my commandments. When my love to the Father, when obedience is an expression of my love to the Father, I don't have to seek an easy way in my obedience. That's what I was thinking. Thank you for listening. Pray that God will quicken you in these difficult times. Lord, bless this portion. Bless the portion to follow, Pastor Benny. Ask you in Jesus Christ's name. Amen.
Good evening. Wasn't that a great portion from Pastor Chris? A great thought to consider for our personal lives. Awesome. Alright, so for the second part of the message for the service, before I quote the text, I will just give you the order of events very quickly. We know that in the midnight of Thursday, Jesus was examined by Annas, the high priest. He was the father-in-law of Caiaphas. That was the first Jewish trial. And then on the preparation day, which is the crucifixion day, Friday, We see that Jesus is tried and condemned, and he is mocked and buffeted. This is the second Jewish trial in the palace of Caiaphas, the high priest. Okay, and Peter's denial of the Lord happens at this time. Following that, we see in Matthew 27, Jesus is condemned by the Sanhedrin. And this is the third Jewish trial. Then after that, we see the remorse and suicide of Judas Iscariot. Then we see Christ is before the Romans. The first Roman trial is before Pilate, early in the morning. And then the second Roman trial is before Herod Antipas. He puts a robe on him and mocks Jesus, ridicules him in Luke 23, 6 to 12. And then the third Roman trial is he is sent before Pilate the second time. And there is a release of the thief Barabbas. So totally Christ undergoes six trials. And then the conclusion of the trial, and there's a mocking and final condemnation, and then his walk to Golgotha. And then he's put on the cross. He refuses to drink the vinegar mixed with gall. Then he's put on the cross. We have the the first 3 hours on the cross. And during this time, he speaks words from the cross, the seven sayings from the cross, and we are aware of it. But I'll just quickly go over it. We see first and foremost, Jesus says, "Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing." Then we have the second saying from the cross, again in Luke 23:43. When the thief says, "Lord, remember me when you enter into your kingdom," Jesus did say that this day you will be with me in paradise. And the third saying is in John chapter 19, toward Mary and John, verse 26 and 27. "Woman, behold your son." And to John, Jesus says, "Behold your mother." This happened in the first 3 hours of the cross, and in the second 3 hours of the cross, from 12 to 3, when Christ was totally cut off from fellowship with the Father and bearing the sins of the whole world on his body, we see the first cry he made there, the fourth cry in fact, is, my God, why have you forsaken me?" And then the next cry was in John 19 verse 28. He said, "I thirst." And then we have the sixth cry in John 19 verse 30, where he said, "It is finished." And then we have the last cry saying, in fact, in Luke 23:46, Jesus, after he cried out with a loud voice, then he said to his Father, "Father, into your hands I commend my spirit." Now, what did he cry out with a loud voice? That's what Luke says. After he cried out with a loud voice, what did he cry out? What he cried out was John 19:30. "It is finished." And then, yeah, so we have the seventh saying, "Father, into your hands I commend my spirit." These are the seven sayings from the cross. But I was reading through the Gospels, and you know, we normally are prone to looking at what was said from the cross by Jesus Christ. And we know all these seven sayings, and we have heard sermons, many, many sermons on it. But there were also things said to the cross. Many things were said to the cross or hurled at the cross when Jesus was hanging on the cross. In Matthew 27 verses 39 and 40, it is also mentioned in Mark 15 29 and 30. The passers-by, see, there are many people who are the passers-by. They glean and they leave. They don't hang in there to really get a glimpse of the mercy and grace of God. The passers-by, they mocked Jesus. That was first saying that was hurled at the cross, saying, if you are the Christ, please come down. Come down from the cross. Because you said you will destroy this temple and you'll build it in 3 days, right? Go ahead and do that. Then there was a second thing from the chief priests, the scribes and the elders and the Pharisees in Mark 15, verse 31 and 32, and also Matthew 27, 41 to 43. They also said he could save others, but himself he cannot save. You come down from the cross and we will see it and we will believe that you are the Son of God. What a mocking, isn't it? Then in Luke 23:35, we see that the rulers also derided him, saying, if you are the Christ, save yourself. Come down from the cross. Then we see from soldiers in Luke 23:36 to 37, they also mocked him. Everyone, almost every section of the society. So you have the people, the chief priests, the leadership, then you have the people and the rulers, then you have the soldiers saying, if you are the king of the Jews, if you are the king of Israel, come down, save yourself. Then, not to leave out, the first thief in Luke 23:39, he himself is on the cross and he is telling, if you are the Christ, save yourself and us. But there was a sixth saying that was set to the cross or set to Jesus while he hung on the cross, and that was from the second thief in Luke 23:42. Lord, remember me when you come into your kingdom. That is a a positive remark. Remember me when you come into your kingdom. Then we have the seventh words spoken from the cross, spoken to the cross, that is in Mark 15:35 to 36, when Jesus cried out, my God, why have you forsaken me? Some people who stood by said, he is calling out to Elijah. So let us see if Elijah will come and save him. Interesting, isn't it? And then in Mark 15, verse 39, when there were phenomenal happenings, when the veil was rent, when there was blackness, when there was the earthquake, veil was rent in the temple, and heavy shaking and all that, the centurion makes a comment, and he said, truly, this man was the Son of God. So we have the seven sayings from the cross, but we have at least eight sayings to the cross. Now I was thinking in relationship to what people said to Jesus while he hung on the cross. Only two were positive remarks. All the remaining six were a form of accusation and a mocking. All their accusation was this: if you are the one who said you are, whom you claim to be, then do this for us. Prove it by coming down from the cross and thereby show your power. Show how strong you are. And then we will consider what you have said about yourself. Now, was it possible for Jesus, if he wanted, that he could have come down from the cross? Absolutely. He could have called, even at that moment, there were 12 legions of angels at his disposal. And he could have actually come down. It was no big deal for him. But as Pastor Chris beautifully pointed out, Jesus Christ had something very special in his communion with the Father. He had a kind of an intimacy that far prevailed over the pressures that he would face in his life, and especially at a time like this. He enjoyed a kind of a communion that really mattered to him for every day that he would face, and especially at a time like this. And we do see his agony in the Garden of Gethsemane, where Christ is praying to the Father and he is shedding drops of blood there, sweat, drops of blood, and he's falling down again. He's lifting himself up and he's praying. But beyond a request that he was making to the Father, that prayer also reveals the intensity of his intimacy that he had with the Father, which actually prepared him for the cross, which really strengthened him for the fact that he needed to go to the cross. Just think about this. Now, if you look at basically communion or fellowship, to recap on what fellowship is, we see in the Old Testament, in Leviticus chapter 7, verses 32, 34, in the law of the peace offering, the priest who offered the offering and his sons could partake of something very special. So the peace offering implied, the law of the peace offering implied, from the same sacrifice, the Father is partaking something and the believer is partaking something. They are sharing something in common. That's the meaning of the word fellowship, koinonia, to share something in common. So from that offering, which was also portion of it that was also consumed, which meant it was for the Father, it was for God in heaven. The fat was consumed, it couldn't be taken, couldn't be eaten. But of the animal, the breast of the animal had to be waved as a wave offering. And it could be eaten by Aaron and his sons. So the wave breast was part of the portion that Aaron and his sons partook of in the peace offering. So from the same offering, God is delighting in something and believer is fed with something. Then also the shoulder, the heave shoulder, was also given to Aaron. It is mentioned in Leviticus 7. We can read that in our free time, up to, from verses 30 to 34. That was also given to Aaron and his sons as a statute for all generations to follow. And they could partake of the heave shoulder. So here you have the wave breast and the heave shoulder that the Aaron and his sons could partake of the peace offering, a portion of it which was consumed on the altar, which we could say, which Father was delighting in of Christ. So of the Son of God, the Father was delighting in something. The believer could feed on something. So Father was delighting in the Son. The believer can feed on the Son. And as a result, God and the believer have something in common. And that is what we call as fellowship. Think about this. Jesus Christ had everything in common with the Father. The wave breast there refers to affections. And the heave shoulder refers to strength. Every time Jesus Christ was in communion with his Father, he received the affections of the Father. And that governed his heart. And secondly, he received the strength that the Father imparted to him. And that was necessary for what he needed to do in life. Now, here is Jesus Christ totally governed by the affections of the Father. And in what way did it manifest itself? In unique ways. In fact, as Pastor Chris beautifully said, in John chapter 18, when Peter, out of his love for his master, he takes the sword and cuts off the ear of the high priest's servant, Jesus is not commending Peter there. Peter had a misplaced zeal, but he did it for Jesus out of his love for his master. But what did Jesus tell him? Put back the sword back into the sheath, and shall I not drink the cup that my Father has given me? Did Peter show his love for Jesus? Yes. But inasmuch as that love for Jesus was shown by Peter, there was something else that governed the heart of Jesus, and that was the affections of the Father. And as a result of that, Jesus could make that statement to Peter saying, shall I not drink the cup that my Father has given to me? There is another instance when Jesus Christ is having his walk to Golgotha. Women, they were weeping. They saw the scourging and different things, and they were really moved and they wept. Tears, because they loved Jesus. It was misplaced pity. But the reason they lamented, it says in Luke 23, 26 to 32, Jesus said, O ye daughters of Jerusalem, do not weep for me. Wow. I mean, if someone would show us sympathy in an hour of trial that we are going through, how comforting that would be for us, isn't it? We say, thank you. Thank you for being there. At least you have understood me. But in the case of Jesus, he looked at them and he said, O ye daughters of Jerusalem, do not weep for me. Weep for yourselves and your children. Christ does not want our sympathy. He wants our trust. Now here is expression of love toward Jesus from Peter, and then here we see people did express their love. They wept, especially women. They did weep because they really cared for him. They loved him. But much more than that, the love of the Father was governing the heart of Jesus. Isn't that interesting? And remember this, the love of God qualifies in every way and at all times. And at this time, how did the love of God qualify for Jesus at this time? Remember, his affections were governed by that of the Father. And where did he receive this affection? Because of his communion with the Father. Wave breast, he partook of that in one sense. Of course, that is speaking about the believer. But he had the affections of the Father in his humanity. And that love and that affection that Christ had, which in his heart, which he was governed by, cancelled out the suggestions made by other loves. Inasmuch as those loves were very loyal, of course Peter was very loyal to Christ, the women were very loyal to Christ, and inasmuch as those loves had very good intentions. And why was it that the love that governed the Son, which was given to him of the Father, could not accept or cancelled out the suggestions made by the other loves. The reason was that Jesus Christ in his humanity, especially when he's faced with pressures like this, he didn't even want a remote thought of him not fulfilling the will of the Father. And as a result of that, the love of the Father governed him to the point he had to negate or cancel out the suggestions and the offers that were brought forth by the loves of people, the other loves, inasmuch as they had very good intentions with it. Think about this. Then there was strength. He had an unusual kind of a strength. And what was the strength that he had? And that is what I shared from the things that were said to the cross, the six sayings to the cross, that was actually a form of insult. And we'll pick one verse, Mark chapter 15. All of those verses have similar tone. We'll read from verse 29. And they that passed by railed on him, wagging their heads and saying, "Ah, you that destroyed the temple and build it in 3 days, save yourself and come down from the cross." Likewise also the chief priests, mocking, said among themselves with the scribes, "He saved others, himself he cannot save. Let Christ, the King of Israel, descend now from the cross, that we may see and believe." And they that were crucified with him also reviled him. Jesus Christ had affections governing his heart, which cancelled out the other loving propositions that came to him. And that was necessary if he would not entertain any other thought. Remember, Christ here is pictured in his humanity, and that was necessary if he would not entertain any thought, even remotely, that is contrary to him going to the cross. But because of his communion with the Father, he also had strength. Didn't he? What was the kind of strength he had? Look at this. What the Pharisees said here. Chief priests mocking him said, "He saved others, himself he cannot save." Now, this is really where the strength of Christ was. In order to save others, he could not save himself. You know, we can picture that as weakness, but as Pastor Chris beautifully shared, divine will see to it that there is a limitation put on divine omnipotence as far as the exercise of it goes, because divine omnipotence of God is always regulated in the context of the will of God. So it was not a limitation of the strength of Jesus, but it was actually a revelation of the strength of Jesus while he was on the cross. What was that strength? It was not that he was unable to save himself. He could if he wanted to. So it was not that he was unable to save himself, but notice this, he was able not to save himself. And because he was able to hang on the cross and had the strength to hang in there without coming down from the cross, therefore today now, according to Hebrews 7:25, he is able to save anyone to the uttermost who come to God through him. This was actually the strength that he had. In 2 Corinthians